All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. Starting hour three here, Anti-War Radio on the Liberty Radio Network. We got Gareth Porter on the phone, as we often do. He's got a new piece at Interpress Service, that's ipsnews.net, and of course it's republished at antiwar.com/Porter. Cables Belie, Gulf States Backing for Strikes on Iran. It's by Gareth Porter and co-written with Jim Loeb, Washington Bureau Chief at Interpress Service. Welcome back to the show, Gareth. How are you, man?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, as always.
Well, I really appreciate you joining us, and this is one of the major headlines to come out of the WikiLeaks State Department cable dump. First of all, well, the two top headlines, really, in the New York Times became the two top narratives of the press, other than Assange, bad guy, and those are the North Koreans are selling the Iranians some missiles, and we debunked that last time you were on the show at the end of last week. And then the other one is, see, the King Abdullah wants us to bomb Iran too. All the Arab leaders want us to, and that proves how right Israel is, that we, the United States of America, ought to get in a war with Iran. And now you've got this piece to say, nuh-uh.
Exactly. Yeah, this is the way the media system works. Obviously, the New York Times, even though it does not have the direct access to the WikiLeaks documents because WikiLeaks cut them out this time, was getting all the documents from the Guardian, and therefore they become the outlet for the main narrative having to do with the WikiLeaks documents for not just the United States but a large part of the world, and that's exactly what's happened. As soon as the Times comes out with their story saying that the Gulf Arab regimes essentially are united with Israel on the question of what needs to be done about Iran, the Washington Post comes out with the same story. They quote that narrative in their lead story on the WikiLeaks, and then more recently in their setup for the latest round of talks in Geneva with Iran, repeat this line that the Gulf Arab states, of course, agree with Israel that the Iranian nuclear sites need to be taken out. So this has indeed become the dominant, overwhelmingly dominant narrative because of the Times. And again, as your readers, your listeners, I should say, by now will have expected, this turns out to be a complete misreporting and indeed a complete distortion of what the WikiLeaks diplomatic cables actually say.
Well, of course, it's got David Sanger's name right at the top. That means whatever you're about to read is not true.
Precisely. I mean, this is David Sanger is the guy who does the equivalent of the aluminum tube story on Iran. I mean, this is precisely what has happened repeatedly, as we've talked about so many times on your show. And in this case, what they did was to cherry-pick two or three rather sensational-sounding quotes from King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia. From
Wait, which King Abdullah? There's so many King Abdullahs on the American payroll.
Well, there's only one King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia, and this is the guy that they're saying, the Times is quoting as saying, we must cut off the head of the snake. And then there are a couple of other quotes from leaders in the United Arab Emirates and from Bahrain who have also sort of filled out the narrative. But then what we find when you really look into the WikiLeaks cables in detail is that it's a very different storyline. First of all, you know, you have to have some context for the Abdullah alleged quote. We don't know that Abdullah has actually said anything like that, by the way. What happened was that the Saudi ambassador to the United States said that that's what Abdullah had been saying to the United States repeatedly. This was in a conversation with the chargé d'affaires of the United States 2 days after the meeting between King Abdullah and Petraeus. And I have to tell you something that I did not put in the story, but if there had been more space, I would have done so. Ray Close, a former CIA station chief in Saudi Arabia who has continued to have very good contacts with Saudis, says that language about cutting off the head of the snake used by the Saudi ambassador is very, very suspicious. he does not believe for a moment that that is language that King Abdullah would have used in a meeting with Petraeus. It's more like the kind of language that Petraeus himself uses to talk about what we're doing to the insurgents in Afghanistan, or what he did to the insurgents in Iraq. So he's very suspicious that that is in anything like an accurate quote from Abdullah. But in any case, even if Abdullah was saying, yeah, we support you on your military option on Iran, this was happening precisely in 2008, spring of 2008, when the Bush administration was sending one delegation after another out to solicit Saudi support for the hard line, for a renewed hard line on Iran. And so as Chaz Freeman, the former U.S. ambassador in Saudi Arabia, has said to us, this kind of language or this kind of statement privately, if it was said by King Abdullah or other Saudi leaders, was simply another case of the Saudis ingratiating themselves, as he puts it, with their protectors, because they wanted to tell the Americans what they wanted to hear. And so it doesn't really mean...
So it's not the Americans listening as the Saudis say, please bomb Iran for us. It's the Americans saying, we'd like you to ask us to bomb Iran.
Exactly.
And they say, all right.
Exactly. That's exactly what was going on. And the Saudis, did not have their own policy. They simply wanted to... For the Americans to believe that the Saudis were supporting them, and they wanted to make sure that the Americans were still going to protect them.
Mm-hmm.
But as time went by, and this is a key part of the story that the Times completely omitted from their account, all of the Gulf sheikdoms really began to realize by 2008, 2009, that a military option was simply not viable. It wasn't going to work. And they began to reflect this in their conversations with U.S. diplomats, saying, look, you've got to do something about the Israelis. The Israelis are going to attack unless you do something. And then it's going to come back on us. I mean, they understood, of course, that if there was an attack on Iran, that the Iranian response was going to be, at their expense. They were going to be attacking all those military bases in Kuwait and Bahrain and elsewhere and Saudi Arabia itself. And the United Arab Emirates, and of course they were going to attack other targets in those Gulf sheikdoms as well. So they were not at all pleased with what they saw coming from a military attack on Iran, and they were letting the Americans know that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, none of that, of course, appears in the New York Times, and this is really where it becomes so clear that the Times was deliberately falsifying the record on this issue.
Well, I think the first day the Guardian had a piece following the New York Times lead. Oh, Saudi king says, cut the head off the snake, et cetera. And then the next headline down was Saudi foreign minister warns against any military action against Iran. That was on the first day over at theguardian.co.uk.
Right. And there's clearly some distinctions between the way the Times handled it and the way some of the other press outlets did, although I think The Guardian is probably the best of the lot in that regard.
Yeah, well, and I think people, if they even took ninth grade geography and they think of how thin that Persian Gulf really is, we have our fifth fleet stationed at Bahrain there. And the Iranians, they don't have the missiles to hit Israel or Europe, but they could shoot across the Persian Gulf, no problem, I think. It's Gareth Porter from Interpress Service. He's got a piece here with Jim Loeb. Cables belie Gulf states backing for strikes on Iran. We'll be right back. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton. Coming up on the show, Robert Stinnett on the Day of Deceit, the truth about FDR and Pearl Harbor. Also wanted to point you over to the History News Network blog, Liberty and Power. David Beto, my good friend, professor of history at the University of Alabama, has a piece called Rose Wilder Lane as Champion of Laissez-Faire Anti-Racism. It's an article written, co-authored with his wife, Linda Royce Beto, and it's about Rose Wilder Lane, who really wrote the Little House on the Prairie books, and who was featured in Jess Raimondo's book, Reclaiming the American Right. A proto-libertarian and a very important one in our anti-imperialist and pro-individual liberty heritage here in this country. So I'll again recommend you go check out hnn.us and look for the Liberty and Power group blog run by my friend David T. Beto. You'll be able to find the link from there. And by the way, for those of you listening to this in podcast form, you do know that this show is live 9 to noon, Monday through Friday at lrn.fm, right? Okay, now back to my friend Gareth Porter. He's on the line from over there in Virginia somewhere, and he writes for IPS News. He's got this piece with Washington Bureau Chief Jim Loeb at ipsnews.net and at antiwar.com/Porter. It's called Cables Belie Gulf States Backing for Strikes on Iran. Now, Gareth, tell me some more about what the sheikdoms and the various emirates on the Arabian Peninsula really think about any American/Israeli assault on Iran.
Well, what I was going to say just as we were going into the break was that the one of the considerations that was expressed in by 2009 in some of these conversations, certainly in the case of the United Arab Emirates with U.S. diplomats, is that if there were a confrontation, military confrontation with Iran over the nuclear program, one of the consequences would be a worldwide oil problem, a supply problem. It was not elaborated on, but it was very clear that the Gulf Arab Gulf officials were concerned that one of the consequences here would not just be a military one, that they would be targeted, but that's serious enough, but that there would also be consequences for the entire oil market worldwide, that they could stand to lose in that proposition as well. So, I mean, that was just another way for them to say to the Americans who they were dealing with, hey, you've got to take seriously the problem of what would happen if there were a military confrontation. And what I have not said explicitly, but what needs to be added here, is that by 2009, what the Saudis, the Kuwaitis, the UAE officials were talking about was increasingly and almost exclusively the danger that the Israelis would strike the Iranian nuclear facilities. And they were warning the Americans, if the Israelis strike, this is really, this is a worst-case scenario. That was the precise terminology that was used in one of the cables, if I recall correctly, the UAE exchange of views with American diplomats, was calling an Israeli preemptive strike a worst-case scenario. And there was a lot of discussion about the dangers of the so-called preemptive strike. That's what increasingly was on the minds of the Arab regimes in the Gulf in 2009 and into 2010.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure you saw Larissa Alexandrovna's piece at Raw Story last week, and I'm sure you read the cable of Mayor Dagan, the head of the Mossad, speaking with R. Nicholas Burns, the Undersecretary of State for killing people or conspiring to start another war or whatever his official title is. And basically, Dagan is telling Burns, look, if you don't start a war with Iran, we will. And, which obviously I think everyone understands. If Israel attacks Iran and a war breaks out between Israel and Iran, the United States will be involved immediately. And that amounted to what Phil Giraldi was, former CIA officer Phil Giraldi was quoted in the article as saying is blackmail.
Well, of course. And here's one of those places where, of course, the WikiLeaks documents are not saying anything that we didn't already know. I mean, this is obviously common knowledge that the Israelis think that way. What is perhaps more interesting from my point of view in terms of revelations by the WikiLeaks documents is one particular one which did involve Dagan again, the Mossad chief of Israel, really importuning his American colleagues, trying to get them on board with a cockamamie scheme to overthrow the regime through, internal stirring things up internally in Iran. The idea of what they called forcing regime change is actually shown to be one of the five pillars of Israeli strategy toward Iran in one of the WikiLeaks documents. If I remember correctly, it was 2009, in any case, don't remember the exact date, which is really quite interesting because one would have thought And even I have to admit that I thought the Israelis had really gone beyond the naive belief by that time that it was even conceivable that they could have any chance of overthrowing the regime in Tehran. But nevertheless, they were still regarding that as a central part of their strategy, that they could, if they could get the Americans to spend more money on subverting the regime in Tehran, that they could somehow succeed in overthrowing the regime. And I think that underlines the degree of sort of la-la land, you know, that prevailed within the national security apparatus of Israel at that point. This is being pushed by a guy who had been in Tehran as their sort of the Israeli unofficial ambassador, going all the way back to the time of the Shah.
Really?
And ever since the overthrow of the Shah, the guy had been trying to convince everybody, and he apparently succeeded in getting successive Israeli governments to go along and to fund his shop devoted fully to the idea that they could overthrow the regime in Tehran. And they were working, you know, year after year, trying to get various U.S. governments to administrations to go along with this idea, and were never quite successful in that.
All right, well, now we're almost out of time, but just tell me quickly, is there any reason to believe that these new talks are going to go anywhere, especially with all these, you know, new and bogus accusations against the Iranians on the eve of the whole thing going down?
Not unless there is a surprising turn within the Obama administration toward a real commitment to engagement diplomatically with Iran, which, you know, I think the chances of that are vanishingly small at this point. I mean, the problem is, as I think I've said before, the Obama administration has never really resolved the differences among various people who have input into the policy. And at this point, I'm pretty clear that the people who refuse to allow even the slightest right to enrichment of uranium by Iran still have a veto power.
Yep. All right, well, same story, different day, only worse. Thanks, Gareth. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for having me, Scott.
All right, everybody. That's my favorite, Dr. Gareth Porter. Interpress Service, that's ipsnews.org, and antiwar.com/Porter. We'll be right back with Robert Stinnett about the greatest treason in the history of all of mankind after this.